Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the November 5th edition of Commodity Week. What will USDA do to follow up its month of October surprises? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with our panelists, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign, Illinois. Our guest in the program, Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services from Webster City, Iowa.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. Ethanol production for the first 2 months of the marketing year, 18% ahead of last year, on pace that, simply can't be fundamentally sustained. When will it stop, and what will the fallout be?
Well, Aaron, I think Curtis, that's a little bit of what the market's trying to find. Where is that magic price that rations demand? Up to this point, margins are still in the black as far as nearby stuff anyway. We continue to have a very healthy export market into Brazil. Dried distiller grains continue to help the bottom line. So as we move forward here, I think that's the magic level of what the market's trying to find out is where's ethanol slow down.
Aaron Curtis is with Midco in Bloomington, Illinois. Jackie Vakes with Stuart Peterson.
Well, I think one of the things that certainly has to loom in the background when you're looking at ethanol is what happens if they do come in and lower the mandate. You know, and that's something we know that can happen. It happened in Brazil. They dropped it 25%. And that's my reasoning why farmers need to be prepared. They need to have some type of a stance in the market. But the China DDG situation is really amazing. They continue to just take immense amounts of DDGs. Some of it we found out is because they're not paying any freight on it. There's no import tax on it. So what is the real price that will stop us is the big question when you look at that. Even if they cut the mandate, will they stop manufacturing?
Paul Cooley.
My take's a little different, and it's always fun here to be with Aaron and Jackie here with this Commodity Week. Sugar prices are exploding. And we know that the sugar is going into the sugar market instead of the ethanol market. We know it's highly profitable to export ethanol into South America, Canada, and also the European Economic Community. It's awfully hard to slow mandates down when we have $3 gasoline at the pumps. Ethanol is still extremely cheap in relation to that, even though we are selling ethanol at a higher price than some gasolines at the present time. Ethanol is a bargain. It puts a lot of Americans to work, and it's extremely cheap, and we don't have aircraft carriers protecting that wonderful renewable fuel.
So we had a couple of things that were mentioned across the board here, and I want to come back to you, Aaron. The mandate is there. That's the RFS, the mandate to produce so much to put into the system, so E10. And we're looking at 4.7 billion bushels usage, at least until we get to Tuesday of next week, for the ethanol industry. That actually is about 250 million bushels over what the mandate for gallons would be in the United States. On the flip side of that, there is the 45-cent blender's tax credit. which is set to expire on the first day of January. So there's the mandate that could change. The blender's tax credit could expire. Do you think that even without the mandate, if can a lame duck Congress manage to extend that 45 cents, whether it's 45 cents or at, I don't know, corn growers seem to think 36 cents would be fine too. Can they get that done?
Well, obviously, they're going to have a lot of stuff to do in, what is it, 3 or 4 weeks. I mean, a lot of pressing issues here moving forward before we get to the first of the year. I think we see some form of it. I think it's going to be a reduced amount. The question is how much. What's our priority level here as we move forward? I mean, we got some other issues that are also affecting farmers that we're going to watch, too. The estate tax, obviously, is a big one, too. Moving forward. So I guess what kind of form is it going to be in? I expect it to be a little bit less, but the question is how much and does that get done?
Well, I guess my thought here, Jackie, is that the thought process is we've got the price of corn that has moved sharply higher, and everybody's wondering when, how, if it will stop. Mandate is one, you know, taking back the mandate is one way. The ethanol blender's tax credit could expire. That might be a second way that it would happen. But I'm wondering, under current conditions with the price of crude oil, and I don't remember where it landed this afternoon, but it was
86.
Yeah, 86. It was in the mid-80s. With the price of crude oil that high, does it really matter at this point? Won't they just continue to blend ethanol because it's economic for the oil industry to do it?
Well, you would expect that would be the case, but that, again, hangs on whether the blender's credit gets extended. I think another issue that's in the background is if we reach a point, and it's questionable what the point really is, because my understanding is that DDGs now are more of the profitable part of the ethanol industry versus the ethanol itself, and they slide with the corn market. But if we get to a point where they're no longer very profitable, will they start using REM certificates? And turning in REM certificates, because right now they're overproducing. So I believe you're the one that told me that there's like 600 to 800 million bushels out there in REM certificates.
In renewable identification number certificates, probably on those kinds. They expire once they're 2 years old. But I suppose, like an option, they could expire completely worthless too. They don't have to be used, but we'll see how all that goes. Let's get back to the matter at hand for producers, and that's the price of grains, oil seeds, corn futures this week, a 5.95 and three quarter top, bottom at 5.68 and three quarters. Settlement price at $5.87 and three quarters, up just 5 3/4 on the week in the nearby December. Next year's at 5.55 1/4, up 13 1/4. What's the most often question that you've been asked for the week, either old or new crop on corn?
Well, the one thing that we did talk about quite a bit, and I gave him the quick quantitative easing lecture, and it was extremely bullish. And it's bullish clear from Wall Street to LaSalle Street to Main Street. My stock portfolio is now worth as much as it was before the recession. The farm economy does seem to be perking up pretty good. The big thing is when we take our surveys, about 85% of the old crop corn and beans have been moved into the marketplace. We are surprised at how much is being sold in the new crop. Are we seeing an avalanche of people coming in and opening up new futures accounts to protect them on sales of new crop corn and beans? No. Are we seeing some people do it? Yes. But as a general rule, that old crop corn and soybeans have been kissed goodbye and is in the marketplace, hedged or owned by somebody else. And the realization is that the farmer is excited about locking in some margins on new crop stuff, but they're not protecting themselves, in my opinion, with any kind of bull call spreads or something of that nature.
And I take it you suggest that they should do that, and what are the reasons to do it?
Well, unless they have some new crop anhydrous ammonia book, they are open to it, to some loss of profitability. One of the things I will say is I don't think the old crop markets are through going up. So, will it pull the new crop up? Sure, $5 corn should encourage a lot of production in the world. $12 new crop beans ought to do the same.
I can't disagree with you one bit, Paul. I think that I think old crop corn has opportunity to move higher also. And one of the things that farmers have to be thinking about is will they be able to sell it? Will it be across the scale? Will it be in cash contracts? What can they do?
Well, I guess from a little bit different standpoint over here, of course, my customer base is a little bit different than what Jackie and Paul have. But I guess my question we get a lot, of course, is how high is this market going to go? And everybody's got a lot of guesses on where we go. But from the elevator standpoint of it, of course, obviously higher prices make a little more cost of doing business, obviously higher. So at this point, our customer base, of course, would like to see this market level off again. And Paul talked a little bit about earlier about what kind of surprises we're going to see in the report. And obviously, from our standpoint, a little higher yield on corn and beans wouldn't hurt our feelings.
Oh, now, Aaron, you know that I pointed at you because you're the grain guy, and we want to know, like 2008, will the new crop be able to be sold when it goes higher?
At this point, yeah, I think you are seeing some elevators back off from anything past the fall of 2011 at this point. But, you know, obviously the market continues to move up. Obviously it raises the stress level on the elevator and the elevator manager. So it's not going to be surprising if some of those elevators out there back off of some purchases if we continue to move this thing higher.
I'll put you into a different comfort zone because you made note before we got onto the show that this week, on the coming week, that is, on Thursday is Veterans Day, and of course we'll have kind of an interesting day, much like we did when we moved up a couple of 30-cent days higher and we had the banks closed and money can't move. How much of a discomfort is that in the marketplace?
Well, from the FCM standpoint, it's a pretty stressful situation, obviously, because we have some CFTC regulations that we have to continue to meet, you know, if customers go into deficits, that kind of thing. And obviously, with the 30-cent move we saw on the report day, we saw we were up, tried the 45-cent limit the next day. Obviously, it creates quite an interesting scenario, The more days that we have that the bank is closed versus when the market is open, obviously it's a very awkward situation, and we'd rather see the banks are going to be closed. You can't move money. Obviously, from our standpoint, we'd like to see the market closed, but I don't think they're going to change those rules anytime soon.
The problem is Chicago's wants their margin money, and the banks aren't open to provide margin money for anybody.
Exactly, right?
And that'll happen on Thursday of this coming week. Soybeans, $12.77, the high, the low at 12.12.5, a settlement price at 12.73.5. They were up 47.5 cents on the week in the nearby November contract. Next year's at $12.22. Up 49. I saw a $13 price on Friday afternoon in the July soybean contract.
Gee whiz, soybeans are exciting. And one of the reasons they are so exciting, even with a larger prediction on the USDA crop production report that Aaron mentioned there, I think the crush margins are unbelievably good in China. I remember back in the 1970s when we had some dollar crush margins, and everybody was extremely happy working for a large soybean processing company. But the margins are even better in China. Their livestock production is profitable. Their soybean crush margins are profitable. And so the demand for beans are just spectacular. So I do think that the carryover is going to drop on this coming supply-demand report. And it is a bullish situation in beans.
I agree. I think that the supply-demand is definitely going to show a tighter number because we continue to see such aggressive sales to China. I think what's supporting beans also is that it's still underpriced if you look at the ratio between corn and beans on a normal basis. And investors look at that type of thing. And we certainly saw beans surge forward on the drop below 76 on the U.S. dollar.
Okay, we just have a couple of minutes left. I want to get everybody in. I'll pull you all on the WASDE numbers, ending stocks for corn and for soybeans. And then also, what do you think USDA might do with the national yield? Aaron, do you have a set of numbers?
Yeah, we do. I would say as far as USDA report on soybeans, expecting something in that 240-245 range, seeing an increase in yield, but also a pretty sizable increase in exports moving forward. So seeing carry out just slightly lower, corn ending stock somewhere in that 850 to 860 range.
Jackie?
On beans, I'm at 235. I think that we're going to see more increases in the exports, of course. On corn, I'm at 802. I think we're going to see some changes in the residual numbers and possibly a little bit of a bump on the export side on that. Wheat, I'm looking at 847.
What you got on yield for soybean and corn?
Oh, on yield for soybean and corn, 44.9 for beans and 155 for corn.
And Paul?
I think the 154.4 bushels, 154.1 is a good number on corn. I think the soybean is 44.9. As far as carryover on beans, you know, somewhere in that 200 or below, and on the corn carryover, somewhere out where around 800 plus million bushels. You know, modern carryover, those are still pretty adequate numbers.
You're listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. When we return, we'll talk with Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services in Webster City, Iowa.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The month of November has gotten off to a decidedly chilly start. Temperatures across Illinois were below normal all week, culminating in a winter-like day on Friday. Average daily temperatures this week ranged from 4 degrees below normal in western Illinois to a whopping 8 degrees below normal in eastern Illinois. It was a mostly dry week as well. Showers popped up in the cold, unstable air on Thursday afternoon, and there were even reports of sleet and grapple in northeastern and in east central Illinois. Over the last 30 days, precipitation has been well under 50% of normal, except in northwestern Illinois, where it is actually close to normal. High pressure slipping off to our south and east will produce southwesterly winds across Illinois next week, and that should bring us some mild weather, at least by November standards. A weak cold front could produce some scattered showers on Wednesday as it moves across Illinois, but a more substantial rain event is shaping up for the end of the week. A surface low pressure system associated with a large upper level trough expected to develop in the Central Plains is forecast to move east through Illinois. And that would bring some rain and a return to colder weather. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the November 5th edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio include Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, Jackie Bakes of Stewart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Our guest we'll talk to in just a moment is Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services out of Webster City, Iowa. Here's some of the rest of the numbers as they settled up in Chicago. Wheat we didn't discuss. It had a top. Our settlement price at 730.5, up 13.75 in the December. July is 754.25 settlement price, up 18.75. Live cattle futures at 97.55, were down a buck 27.5. November feeders at 110.60, up 27.5, and the lean hogs settled $66.95, up 75 cents. Sue Martin is on the phone line with us this afternoon from Webster City. Good afternoon to you, Sue. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon.
Did you get everything all done and all your field work done in the area there in your part of the world of Iowa?
Oh, yeah. In fact, a lot of farmers are finishing up even with the putting on the fertilizer. It's been a gorgeous fall, beautiful fall, and in fact, we're a little on the dry side, but nobody's really complaining right now.
Have you been talking to your client base about making sales of next year's corn crop?
Well, I have been talking to some of them, and asked a lot about that, actually. And my question to them is, how are you set up with your input costs? You know, how do you turn and look the other way with $5 plus cash corn? Off the combine, that's, you know, if that's the worst you take, you're going to have a good year providing you produce. And so my question to them is, when they ask, I say, okay, what are you doing for your inputs? Are you, how well covered are you at this time? Because if you have your input costs for next year pretty well locked up, and amazingly, a lot of them tell me they do, then I say, yeah, go ahead and do that. I mean, this is a wonderful place to start. But in the meantime, I don't think our highs are in yet. I think we still have better prices to come. I think the one thing that, for me, that is a big concern next year is the weather. I think that's going to be the big kicker, that and along with the dollar and what the dollar does. You know, I think that if we were to break peak here and break the markets back, you would not see any rationing, and it would just continue to draw us tighter to where the longer we delay this, then the more enthusiastic it's going to be as we get into spring and summer.
Sue, obviously we're going to have a lot of acreage talk here as we move through the winter. Is there enough corn and soybean acres to make everybody happy come next spring?
You know, I don't think so. I think that, first off, you know, the beans are going to give up acres to cotton. And then we get past that. Now we're looking at the fight with wheat to corn. And you might get some beans on the backside of wheat, but still, you're going to have a lot of issues there. Now, in the spring wheat areas, you'll probably pick up some bean acres up there if the beans keep pushing. So, you know, it's, I think I see a situation here where we're going to ebb and flow and shift back and forth as we continue to compete. And it's a long time between now and next spring. So we certainly, but we're already into those fights. And, of course, with the fertilizer going on this fall, you're already getting some decision-making being done as far as corn, but then it'll still leave room for maybe some last-minute changes if one outdoes the other.
So how much impact do you think it will have on commodity prices as the index funds roll out of their positions, you know, in these next couple of months?
Well, I think, you know, as you go towards the end of the year, you're going to have some impact there. But then as you start to come back into the new year, they're going to just come waltzing right back at us. There is so much money, and yet you've got a stock market that's pushing. But for some reason, I feel like the trade is not as enamored with the stock market as they are food. And so I think commodities, and, you know, it's becoming with the second round, or not the, you know, the quantitative easing QE2 program that the Fed just announced here this week, which had been talked about for quite some time, I think everybody's got this attitude that it's going to be very inflationary. And perhaps maybe to some degree it is, but we're certainly putting a lot of dollars out there. But you've got a APEC meeting coming up here next week in G20, and there's going to be a lot of complaints there, and the talk of the currency issues is certainly going to come up because Brazil's very upset. Brazil certainly does not like the fall in our dollar. It's hurtful to their farmers, and in the meantime, they've been pretty aggressive in making cash sales. They're very aggressive on their cash sales for soybeans as compared to what they were a year ago at this time. But also, China is very frustrated about it, too. And so I think it's going to be interesting this next week as to what ebb and flows on the financial sides of things. I look for the dollar to be kind of all over the map here for a little bit, and then I look for a rise in the dollar.
Sue, the USDA, of course, had Iowa at 169. FC Stone had it at 172 on the corn yield, and Informa at 167. Who's right? And also, what would a good 80 sell for out in Webster City today?
Well, first off, I would go with Informa's number. I think this yield is worse than people realize. I think that it was so consistent everywhere, just commonly 30, 40 bushels down. And, you know, it could be Ohio, it could be Indiana, it could be Illinois, it could be Iowa, it could be Nebraska. You know, it didn't seem to matter. South Dakota, I'm not hearing all that great of yields. Wisconsin started off hearing some good yields, and then that sort of started to change. And Minnesota is up in the air. So, and it can't even come, you know, begin to make up for all the losses we've had. So I think the surprise was that as the crop got finished in harvest, I think the surprise was that the yields just continued to be the same, disappointing. And I think that when we're all said and done in the final, we're going to be under 150. I think we're more like a 148, possibly a 146. somewhere in there. And but will the USDA do that right away? Now, that would be the shock if that happened, you know, that they were aggressive with that. I don't think so. That seems more like something you'll see next January, maybe even a little bit later as they show a disappearance of crop. And the other thing is that the stocks number back in the end of September, I still maintain that was not new crop corn or old crop corn. That was new crop corn that was commingled. And at some point, I think that's going to be back in our face, and we'll find out how much tighter we are. So I guess I would have to say I think the yield is less than what any of these are actually saying in the end. But for now, it's like everybody guesses what is the USDA going to say, and so I guess I would have to go with Informa at 167. I think that an 80 in Webster City, Iowa, would probably draw right around 7,500 right at this time.
Wow. You must have been writing those down. I forgot about the 80 for a while. Hey, I've got a second question, and maybe the rest of these might want to chime in on this. What's the possibility that producers think they were off 20 to 30 bushels, but really what they're off was last year's crop? And they had, and they're off 20 to 30 bushels from last year's crop, but the producer was basing it off volume last year, and they're really not that much farther down. They're not off as much as they think.
You know, that is a good question, because when you say it like that, I can see that. When you talk to farmers and they tell you, well, last year we had this and we're getting this, so we're down this much. So they are comparing very much to the bushels of last year. So when you say it like that, yeah, I could see where we could possibly have a little bit of a difference there.
You have any viewpoint on what will happen between in the lame duck session with, I don't know, estate tax, with ethanol, the blender's tax credit, any of those sorts of things?
Well, I think that blender's tax credit is probably going to be pulled. That would not surprise me that they do that. Still, will that stop the ethanol business from escalating? Some say we'll go into like a dollar break in corn. Well, as high as we're getting to be, by the time we get to that decision, the market could handle a dollar break and still be at a pretty high price. I think that at the end of the day, when you add up all the things like the DDGs that we're sending out the door, that's a pretty good little business in of itself. But also, I think that, you know, you just don't shut these things down. And I think the big thing is that ethanol plants appear to have good coverage through January and some of them all the way through March. Beyond that, they haven't been very aggressive.
Sue, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Sue Martin is with Ag and Investment Services out of Webster City, Iowa. Time for a final word from our panelists in studio. Aaron Curtis of Midco, we'll start with you.
Just want to do my public service announcement here and remind everybody to set their clocks back this weekend. We don't want you to be too early there for Sunday night 6 o'clock trade.
Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson.
Oh my goodness, how do you follow that? I would have to say I think in today's environment, managing your risk is not a matter of choice, it's a matter of survival.
Paul Cooley of ADM.
Out of that 800 million bushels of carryover, it's probably 200 or 300 million of damaged corn.
Thank you so much to everybody for being here for Commodity Week. You can always hear it again if you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Please do visit the website. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You have a great weekend and a good week. I'm Todd Gleason.